This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine. Mac is on leave, but it's Tass here with Neil Farrow.
Yes, lovely to be here.
It's great to have you here, Neil. We're now going to move on. We want to talk about religious freedoms and marriage equality. During the course of the week, our Prime Minister announced that he was going to set up a review, and heading up that review was going to be a former Howard-era cabinet minister, Phil Ruddock.
And I think architect of our current immigration solution, quote unquote, exactly. Was originally Ruddock's invention.
Exactly. Now, Phil Ruddock, of course, has left Parliament but couldn't actually get out of the limelight. So he's the mayor of Hornsby, a seat somewhere in New South Wales. The panel that he's heading up includes a former retired federal court judge, Annabel Bennett, an Australian Human Rights Commissioner, Roslyn Croucher, I think she's the current Human Rights Commissioner, and also a Jesuit priest who's actually pro-marriage equality, Frank Brennan.
But I note that we don't have any that I'm aware of, and I could be corrected by our listeners this morning, but is there any out, open LGBTI people on this panel that is discussing the religious protections that are being prompted by a marriage equality debate?
Well, let's ask Michael Koziol. Michael, good morning.
Good morning. Hello.
Great to have you on the wire.
is my understanding as the answer to that question. But once again, I could be corrected. But no, I don't believe there are any LGBTI people on the panel. So there you go.
So Michael, you're an investigative reporter, and you cover federal politics. And so you've been covering this issue, and you've actually managed to have a conversation with Phil Ruddock himself, haven't you?
No, I've talked to Ruddock about it on the day that was announced. Go ahead.
So I was just going to ask you, what can you tell us about this particular review and its terms of reference, and what can we expect them to address during this review process? Because from what I understand, they are going to report early next year, aren't they?
They are. It's going to be slapdash might be a bit flippant, but it's going to be a pretty quick effort. I think they're reporting by the end of March, and that obviously includes this Christmas, New Year, January period where no one really does anything. So it's going to be pretty rapid, and I think part of that is reflects the fact that this is a bit of a sort of token gesture to people within the coalition, particularly, to sort of say, look, let's just get same-sex marriage legislation through the parliament. We'll deal with all this religious freedom stuff later in a separate process. And that's, placated a few people within the Liberal Party, also within Labor, it must be said, who were getting a bit nervous about some of this religious stuff. I talked to Ruddock about it. I sort of said, what is the purpose of this review? And he said, sort of to put beyond doubt Australia's commitment to religious freedom, which to me essentially says that he believes we've got the balance right already, and that pretty much his review will most likely make very minor recommendations. That's just putting my crystal ball on, but when the answer to the question what's the point of this is to say that it's to put status quo beyond reasonable doubt, I think you can kind of get an idea of where we're at with this thing.
So I have a couple of questions for you, Michael. The first one is, we've obviously spent $100 million on this voluntary postal survey. What is the cost of this review, and what is the further impact for taxpayers on that? And then my second question is, we were talking about this earlier today, we have a section of our constitution that specifically speaks to religious and free exercise of religion, section 116. Now, I know a lot of our federal senators and members are not particularly good at reading section 44 of our constitution, but can they also not read section 116? We only have 130 sections in the constitution.
They're both very good points. To the first question, I can't actually tell you the exact figure. I think it's pretty cheap, though. Ruddock's getting paid for it, some pro rata fee. The others, and I presume Annabel Bennett, being she's retired, isn't she? She'll probably have to get paid something as well. Rosalind Crowther, I think, is doing it within her role as the president of the Australian Human Rights Commission, so that's kind of already covered. So I think it's a pretty cheap process, and as we talked about earlier, it's only going for a very short period of time, so certainly nothing like the $75 million Royal Commission that was announced yesterday. In terms of the second point about the Constitution, yeah, I mean, look, we do already have that general religious freedom provision in the Constitution. At the same time, though, I mean, this religious stuff is embedded into existing laws. So, you know, in your Sex Discrimination Act, for example, you already have those exemptions for religious organisations in so that, you know, churches can are free to hire whoever they want. Also in church-run organisations, the same thing applies. So, you know, these kind of things are written into the laws and statutes that are on the books, and that essentially is what the Ruddock Review is supposed to be looking at. You know, are those existing provisions at both the statute level and, I guess, at the common law level, what's been decided in the courts, you know, are they appropriate, are they sufficient, particularly in light of, you know, the change to the law that we're going to see around marriage this week.
And look, I think there's an opportunity there, and we're talking about advocacy and campaigning across the LGBTI community. There's a number of very intelligent policy thinkers, and I pay my credit to Jamie Gardner, who's been involved in this space for a very long time. Is there an opportunity, do you think, to propose what he's put up as called the transparency provisions on a number of years? And Michael, in summary, this pretty much says that if you wish to apply for the shield of religious exemptions, you actually have to disclose it. So it's an opt-in regime for religious exemptions. So it generally says, you know, you're a religious organisation, you have the right to discriminate, but you don't get it automatically, and you need to fill out a piece of paper, and we need to put your name on a website. And Jamie Gardner has been championing this for years as a transparency provision. And my interesting thought around this is, do you think this review would tolerate or partake in the LGBTI community getting active and saying, okay, well, this is an opportunity for us to review the shield of religious exemptions, and let's push
for these transparency
provisions. I think you
know the answer to that, Neil.
You know, it's worth pushing, just like I'm hopeful Michael will ask journalistically, why isn't there an LGBTI rep on this review?
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, I kind of canvassed with Rudder, you know, could this possibly include much broader things like, you know, the tax exemption for religious organisations, for the churches, which is, you know, something I kind of look at and think, you know, kind of raise my eyebrows a bit. But and he said, you know, well, look, I'd be amazed if it came up, but you never know, kind of thing. And, you know, at the same time, it may look at, you know, other issues like the burqa, for example. I mean, you know, I again stress that's probably not going to be the focus, but it is broadly a review into religious freedom. So, you know, you'd expect someone to raise the issue of the burqa at least. And I think it's a very, you know, the Jamie Gardner stuff, the compelling and reasonable point to raise and to put to Ruddock. And to me sounds like a reasonable proposition. I mean, you know, there may very well be churches like the Uniting Church that don't want to opt in to such a regime. So, you know, why not make that something that is available to them but not mandatory or not automatic. I think that would be a good starting point personally.
So, Neil, that provision that you're talking about that Jamie Gardner's been advocating for already exists in some other frameworks, for example, in gender-specific venues and activities. So we know that there's a number of gay and lesbian bars around that have actually applied for an exemption from being able to, or have applied for an exemption to discriminate. That's not quite right.
To the anti-discrimination.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Correct. Correct.
But yeah.
So it exists in other optics, and you know, it's a really good example from if I was to put a pretend conservative hat on of transparency and small government, in that, you know, you've got the protections, but you need to opt in, and the public should be aware that you've chosen to opt in. And I think a lot of churches, the Quakers, the Uniting Church and others, will choose not to opt in. And I think as citizens, we can then exercise our freedom of choice, which the Liberal Party likes to talk about, and go from there. But we do have a question that's come in about concepts around the freedom of speech, and the question's specifically is, you know, what's your thoughts, Michael, around the implications for freedom of speech, and what's my thoughts as well on this? I've always believed in a constrained freedom of speech. You know, I don't support vilification, hate speech, violence, a whole heap of other things, but that also has to do probably with my politics. But Michael, what's your thoughts about the freedom of speech versus freedom of religion argument in this area?
Oh, I mean, look, as a journalist, I kind of tend to be pretty kind of laissez-faire on the freedom of speech question. I mean, I don't really believe in going after people for something that they say unless they're inciting something horrible or criminal that we don't like. But at the same time, I don't buy this the allegation that freedom of speech is somehow under threat. I mean, I remember because of, same-sex marriage, I mean, that's pretty ludicrous. I remember going to the launch of the Coalition for Marriage campaign at which people like Matt Canavan and Lyle Shelton got up and said that it might become illegal to say that you think marriage should be between a man and a woman. I mean, that's kind of... That's pretty crazy. I mean, we're pretty much getting into thought crime territory there. And to kind of get up in front of people and say, you think this is what's going to happen, is pretty ludicrous and pretty misleading. So, I think the whole involvement of freedom of speech in this debate is a furphy. The religious stuff, I mean, you can kind of get why that might come up. There's like some genuine tension there, but, I think as Philip Ruddock is probably going to find, we kind of have the balance right as things stand.
And of course, voting is obviously silent in Australia, but we're curious, did you vote yes or no, Michael?
Me? I don't really have any problem saying that I voted yes. I think, that's...
There's a bit of a relief in the studio.
There is definitely relief. And I do have one thing, and this is just me picking you up on some terminology, but I have to correct a journalist whenever I get the opportunity in this area, but same-sex marriage actually precludes trans and intersex people. And so, throughout this entire debate, I know the no case has been agitating that it's same-sex or gay marriage, and we've been advocating marriage equality. Above and beyond the framing, there's a very important distinction there in that same-sex marriage does exclude trans and intersex people. Find the word that you may, but I think we've always got to be cautious that our trans and intersex community, which represent about one in every 1,500 people are trans or intersex, so it's the same commonality as red hair, that it's really important that we use that terminology where we can. So that's just me baiting you towards the end of the conversation.
We should, of course, note
that the bill that's going to pass through the Parliament this week, of course, allows for any two people to get married, which is very important.
But it is actually interesting that the question on the ballot itself, or the postal vote, in fact, was, do you agree with same-sex marriage? So actually, and I wonder whether it was particularly designed, the question was particularly designed to put some people off.
I just don't think you can really phrase it in any other way. I mean,
you could say, do you believe that everybody has the right to get married?
Yeah.
There's a whole range of ways you could have phrased the question.
And we grapple with this when we're writing about it, but I think in terms of, for me, writing about it for a mass audience, they've got to be able to understand what you're writing about. I think broadly now people do also understand what you mean by the term marriage equality, but it's sort of a bit in flux when you talk about these things. You say same-sex marriage, kind of everyone gets what you're talking about. It can be a bit less clear with other terms. But anyway, that's just me with my mass mainstream media hat on. We shouldn't get bogged down in that, I suppose.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks a lot for that, Michael. Michael, just before we do wind up, do you have any other sort of gems that you can share with us on the Ruddock review?
Gems. Oh, look, I think it's kind of interesting how, some of the Labor MPs who spoke in Parliament this week during the debate on the bill were kind of, we know there are some very socially conservative Labor people in the Parliament. A couple of them ended up actually voting against Dean Smith's bill, which was their prerogative. I think the Ruddock review by chance also gave them a reason to kind of pipe down over this. There was a chance that there was going to be a big brawl in the Labor Party about some of these amendments, allowing civil celibates to refuse to marry gay couples, that sort of thing. And in the end, they all piped down and said, we're going to wave this bill through as it is. And that was kind of important. And I think, ironically, the Ruddock review placated them a little bit by being able to say, all right, well, you know, we'll kick this can down the road and deal with it next year. So, you know, it kind of is a bit of a superfluous, perhaps almost unnecessary process, but maybe it did kind of save the day and save some headaches in Parliament this week by kicking the can down the road. So there you go.
Michael Koziol, thank you very much for making some time available to speak with us this morning. Always very interesting. I love reading your pieces in the Fairfax Press.
Thank you.
And if you're in Melbourne next, please come and join us in the studio.
Would love to.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.